The following is a class given by His Holiness Larompa Swami on improving the quality of chanting, recorded on 4th July 2008 in Hanover Park, United States.
Now we're going to step back a bit. Again, think of the gates entering into the inner sanctum of the Holy Name. We're going to step back and discuss a little bit what our acharyas have said, some shiksha, some instructions from them on how to improve the quality of our chanting. And then we'll try to connect that to the heart and then see if we can go forward. Something that holds us back from the pure holy name is maintaining material conceptions. Rather than letting go of those material conceptions and accepting reality, the spiritual conception of life. So it starts with the conception of self. So we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, and we're holding on to the material conception of self, what our expectations are, our desires are, our happiness is, what's important to us, our value system, our self. And connected to self is mind, the objects that make me happy or are making me unhappy out there, I and mine. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that on the beginning of the spiritual path, let's say, following Rupa Goswami's explanation, there's some preliminary faith, and in that preliminary faith, Krishna sends some devotee who then awakens that faith, strengthens that faith enough where that faith says, and this applies to everyone here, let me become a Vaishnava. We'd be doing other things on the 4th of July besides being here if we didn't have that faith. We all have that faith. But that faith is, as was mentioned earlier, it's not so strong. Because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, we're of divided mind. We have faith, let me become a Vaishnav, but there's this residual hanging on. We're maintaining material attachments, maintaining material conceptions of what it means to be happy, what it means to be successful. I mean, I hear it all the time. It's very common. I mean, it's refreshing in one sense in the association of devotees where conversation goes to other things besides what you experience when you go to normal, quote, religious functions. As soon as the religious function is over, people are talking about money and investment and during the Rath Yatra parade in Detroit, those some of you are here from Detroit, There was so much rain, there was not a lot of focus during the parade on the holy name as much as it would be if it was a nice sunny day. It was pouring rain. So people were gathered under their umbrellas talking about business. What's going on with the market? Not even just like what's happening in their workplace, just how they're investing the money. And it was several groups of people. I was like, phew. I came to the parade to chant for gain. They weren't. So, because if we're maintaining material desires, material attachments, material conceptions, that's going to fill the mind. And so the mind is divided. It can't go to the holy name, even though we're asserting, I want to be a devotee. I want to serve the Lord. So something that will help our chanting effectively or qualitatively is looking to this very simple business. It may seem like routine business or just housekeeping or something, of spiritualizing our conceptions of things, starting with ourselves. Spiritual conception of self and spiritual conception of our purpose and goal and the things around us, the mind aspects. And then to go further with that, look for proper support or resources that will be good association for us, that will help us spiritualize our conceptions of how we do what we do, how we lead our life, and how on our keeping strong this core position of wanting to be a devotee, spiritualizing the various aspects of our lives. So that's one topic. Look to various ways to spiritualize the conceptions of I and mine. At the root of that I and mine misconception is false ego, and false ego is very stubborn and also very subtle. I mean, you go after false ego over here, and all of a sudden it's over there, and it's over there, and it's over there. Very stubborn, very tenacious, very subtle. I mean, in one sense, not so subtle, but so subtle that it's hard to root it out. But these ways mentioned, look to spiritualize the conceptions of what is the holy name. As you make this comment, how many times in Prabhupada's lectures did he, not with a small hammer, with a big hammer, big sledgehammer, slam on these points again and again and again and again, to the point where some people said, he's just saying the same thing again and again. Where's something new? It's again and again. To spiritualize the conception of self and work and the duties of life, again and again. So it goes in. And yet it's still there. The material attachment is still there. So if that awakened spirit to become a genuine devotee grows, then another, not exactly a technique, but it's something that just naturally happens, is prayer. Calling out. We're speaking of calling out to the holy name before, calling out to Lord Nityananda to deliver the pure holy name, but I've got these material conceptions, material attachments that are just it doesn't go away. I'm not receiving this pure holy name. So praying to Krishna. And our acharyas describe that when Krishna hears such sincere prayer, he responds. There's one very nice prayer by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Alas, this is aho. How unfortunate I am, having fallen into this insurmountable ocean of material existence. I'm being thrown here and there by the violent waves of my wicked desires. I cry miserably at my helpless condition, but I do not see any hope for being saved. What should I do? I've heard devotees describe it more or less same kind of a message. How will I be delivered? I do not see any solution to my dilemma. Alas, alas! I am most unfortunate. Take me to you, my Lord. Take me up to the shade of the cool dust of your lotus feet. Oh, have mercy on this wretched self. Krishna's loving. Krishna is very compassionate, and he hears that call. And with faith in him, not faith in the material false shelters, but trying to rid oneself of those false shelters, and it just don't go away, being tossed. So then one calls to Krishna, and Krishna reciprocates. Krishna reciprocates in many ways. So, nurturing of faith is another item. As we heard in the song, the earlier songs that we sang, one of the things that the pure holy name does, that the holy name in contact with the soul does, is it awakens a natural, innate, and genuine understanding of things as they are. The light goes on from darkness to illumination. And then with illumination we can see. We still need some courage. We still need to give up hesitation when we know what we should do and do it. But at least we can see what to do. Different than someone who doesn't even see what to do. And even someone can stand next to them and say, this is what it is and this is what you should do, and they don't see it and they don't do it. But from this prayerful mood, when calling upon the holy name, the capacity to see things with some clarity. And the mitigation or diminishing of this harassing feature of the material energy is something that one experiences. We were having this discussion the other day in our morning classes where Ananda Vrindavan was saying, you know, I can't speak about these higher things, but I can say from practical experience that just from practicing Krishna consciousness for some time, the forcing, the impelling feature of the material energy, it's a different experience. It's not the same. It's we've gotten some pardon, some reprieve from that. And all that we did was some devotional service. Krishna reciprocates in that way. Or a scriptural description of the same thing is as I discussed before, Lord Kapiladev describes, when in the association of sadhus who are faithful, they're carrying faith, they're carrying devotion, and we just associate with them and do with them the things that even we do with, but we do with them, we do with some faith, this oppressive, controlling, conditioning feature of material covering subsides to some degree. The I and mine diminishes so that we can see better. It's like, you know, the cloud cover keeps moving. When the sun comes out, it's brighter. Then the cloud cover becomes less bright. Some dark clouds it becomes. So, in the illumination of things is one of the, it's one of the faith building experiences. If we're going back to this sincere word again, if we're sincere, we'll experience that at least to some degree, and experiencing that at least to some degree nourishes faith. And when our faith is nourished, then we go back to that same source with renewed faith, increased faith, and then with that increased faith, something, this mercy comes again in a increased degree. We experience something, and that nourishes our faith. It keeps going like that. When we, so the topic is increasing the quality. What are some of the things that our acharyas describe about increasing the quality of chanting? We've been reading in the first canto about Narada, and much like ourselves, Narada was coming from a position of being a nobody, an absolutely insignificant nobody, and he became Narada Muni in one lifetime. So what made a big difference was because he just received this good fortune of the sages that stayed at the inn of his mother, or the inn where his mother was serving. He also served them, and coverings became removed, and he developed some appreciation, and they developed some affection for him, and as that service relationship grew and grew, they naturally became increasingly merciful upon him and began instructing him in confidential things like the ways of devotional service. And he applied those ways of devotional service, which encouraged them very much, and his qualities became increasingly gentle and open and receptive, and so they gave him sacred mantra to chant. They could go further and go further, and just this increasing of the relationships with those who are representing Krishna and representing the holy name, and that is a quality of chanting enhancer. We strengthen our relationships with faithful devotees. It's again why we've come here together. And in that association, we hear how the pure chanting of the holy name attracts Krishna. In fact, we hear that the chant, the Krishna's name and Krishna are non-different. So when chanting, we should chant with that understanding. But as that understanding grows, it's the holy name of Krishna is even more merciful than Krishna in his form. The form of his holy name is even more merciful because he makes himself readily available, readily accessible. Without qualification, anyone can chant the holy name. We saw some people last night at Harinam Sankirtan who were not in the most fit condition of sattvic existence. And they were chanting the holy name. Some of them were chanting. They were just dancing. They were dancing intoxicated. But engaged in hearing and chanting and dancing, and even unknowingly, the holy name is so merciful that it attracts Krishna. And the pure chanting go all the way, and we discussed Narada just by chanting. Krishna's in his heart. Prahlad Maharaj described like that to Lord Nrisimhadev. For myself, I have no problem. Because just by remembering you, at once, you're there. So I have no requirement. But my father, this Hiranyakashipu guy, he needs some help. Please forgive him for all the sinful activities that he's done. And Lord Nrisimhadev's reply was, that's already taken care of because he's related to you. So ask for something else that's not already happened. He's already delivered. And the holy name is even more merciful because directly one can attract Krishna through chanting. He's present on one's tongue. He makes himself so readily accessible. We mentioned this before, but repeat it again because it's worth it. The holy name is supremely pure. So although in the course of my interactions with devotees, it's one of the moods that devotees get into sometimes, that says, I'm not qualified, I'm too this or that, and so what's the hope? Heard a few of them in the past few days. What's the hope? Because I'm stuck, or I'm so attached, or I'm something or other, I'm disqualified in some way. But when chanting, this is spiritualizing the conception of the holy name. The holy name is supremely pure. And that supremely pure holy name, if chanted with some acknowledgement, some recognition of that pure holy name, one becomes purified. There's a real nice quote found in the Agni Purana describing the pure holy name. Find it quickly. Here we go. The name of Krishna is purely spiritual. There is no knowledge as great as that of the name, and no practice. Sounds like our theme song. Madhuram Madhurebhyo Hi Mangalam. No practice of austerity or meditation, no result of spiritual activity, no form of renunciation, no act of sense control, no pious act, and no goal that can match it. The name is the supreme liberation, the supreme destination, and the supreme peace. The name is eternal life itself. The name is the supreme devotion and the supreme intelligence. The name is the supreme love and the supreme remembrance. The name is the soul's reason for existence. The name is the Lord of the soul and the most worshipful object and the supreme guru. So, if we... These are the glories, the opulences of the holy name. And when something that can enhance the quality of chanting is to, let's say, before chanting or intermittently when chanting, to like stop and hear some of the glories of the holy name and inspire the heart and those thoughts of the glories of the holy name. So you're chanting the holy name, appreciating its supreme purity. And purity is what we're seeking, because in that state of purity, then everything is there. Our happiness is there, our knowledge is there, our original self is rediscovered, the abandonment of the real self that we've been doing for so long is reversed. We're connecting to who we really are. We're connecting to the real position of love, the natural repose of love. So, hearing the mahima, the glories of the pure holy name, is important in improving the quality of chanting and carrying those appreciations of the purity of the holy name. I mentioned this the other day, but at the 24-hour kirtan that just took place in New Vrindavan, for 2 years in a row, because the 24-hour kirtan in New Vrindavan started last year with the, I guess, the second generation devotees or the Gurukulis, the younger devotees that are, they grew up with the holy name and they're still attached to the holy name, and they wanted to get together and have a Sangha of 24-hour kirtan. So this is the second year of that. And I happened to be in New Vrindavan for some other function I was to participate in last year and again this year. And one of the participants was Madhava from Switzerland. He lives in Switzerland.
Yes, born in Mauritius.
Born in Mauritius, lives in Switzerland, and his occupation is a carpenter, I understand. He just like has a simple job. And when he came to the 24-hour kirtan, he sang two-hour sessions, and it was one melody. Same melody for both of the two-hour sessions. Then he came this year, two-hour sessions, same melody. And that was, you know, he sings very nicely. I was scratching my head wondering why one melody? Because, you know, there's so many melodies, so many nice melodies. But the first of those two sessions, last 24-hour kirtan, sitting down, it's, you know, there's it's like layers of entry into the holy name. There's a musical part. Then you go past the musical part, like Prasanna Maharaj was describing the idea of self-sufficiency. It's becoming like an interesting topic today, because the price of fuel and the price of food and the price of living, and maybe the whole thing's going to collapse and implode. Maybe we need to have some self-sufficiency. So there are some devotees he described that he worked with them, and he calls it a romance period, where they try to do self-sufficiency. It's like, you know, marriage. It's a romance period. Then after you get to know the person, the romance is over, and then it's living together. But that's a whole other thing than the romance part. So living with the holy name, abiding with the holy name, being present with the holy name. And it's the same melody. again and again, the holy name and the holy name and the holy name and the holy name, and it's just the holy name. At least that was my appreciation of being in this kirtan. He's just, the musical part is nice, but that's not the essence. The essence is the holy name. And that's like, that's his meditation, and that's his message, and you know, just both the times, I've only spoken to him twice, but both of the times that I spoke with him, I spoke with him just before speaking with you in that little mandap area. It's just, he exhibits the quality, he emanates the qualities of Trinada Pisu Niche Na Torora Pisu Hishna Na. Maybe there's something other than him that I didn't encounter, but just those two exchanges, it was very consistent. Just, it was, please bless me that I can have the mercy of the holy name. Something very genuine. So, chanting of the holy name, it works both ways. Chanting of the holy name helps one to develop proper qualities. By cultivation of the qualities that Lord Chaitanya mentions, it helps one enter into the holy name. Then, our acharyas describe quantitative. Sometimes this is an issue that devotees raise, so I want to just touch on it, see if it hits anybody's button. Quantitative as opposed to qualitative chanting. Isn't it more important to chant quality rounds? I'm not so concerned about quantity, I'm concerned about quality. But there's something about quality that helps quantity, and something about quantity that helps quality. Well, reverse. So, our acharyas teach, Bhaktivinoda Thakur taught, and Bhaktisiddhanta naturally also taught, building to the point, this is the goal, when one is constantly chanting. But they describe increments of 4, 4, 8, 12, 16, and keep going, increments of 4, 20, 24, keep going, keep going, keep going. The goal is not pride. See how many rounds I chant. I know some devotees that chant many rounds, and they're reluctant to identify how many rounds they chant because they know what that does for their own ego, and that does for other people thinking, oh, compete, or something like that. Your greatness is you chant so many rounds. But the miracle, so that's the ego stuff. The instruction part is that numerical chanting can enhance the quality. Read Harinam Chintamani, written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where Haridas Thakur, our acharya, is describing how to overcome offenses. And one of the recommendations he makes for each of the 10 offenses is constant chanting of the holy name. And how can we constantly chant? But we can incrementally increase. And that would be done with, nurtured by the faith in the holy name. And instructions of great souls to do so. Or at least, in our case, at least, maintaining our fixed vow, whatever the number of rounds that we're chanting daily, certainly for initiated, it's minimum 16. And then on auspicious days, Akadasis and appearance days of the Lord or His great devotees, on those auspicious days, increasing our chanting, numerically increasing our chanting on those auspicious days, will help enhance the quality of our chanting because they're auspicious days. We have faith in the auspiciousness of those days and auspiciousness of the holy name and the instructions to do so. Increasing numerical chanting can increase the quality of chanting. And on those auspicious days, or pervasively in the landscape of your life, decrease consciously, cultivate decreasing unnecessary sense activity, like eating, sleeping, especially on those days. Increasing our minimizing of the bodily and increasing of the spiritual activities. Hearing and chanting, reading, chanting the holy name on auspicious days. It'll increase the quality of chanting. It doesn't have to be. Here we are on the 4th of July. It's not an auspicious day from a Vedic point of view, but it's made auspicious by the Sangha of Vaishnavas and taking part in those assemblies where devotees are coming together to focus on the holy name with some enthusiasm. Then taking part in those activities is also beneficial to increase the quality of chanting. From time to time, there are, as we're doing here, it's a little bit different than a japa retreat. But this type of activity, as well as very, very specific japa retreats, they're very beneficial. You've taken part in several of them, right? Has it affected the quality of your chanting?
Yeah. Revolutionary.
Wow. Revolutionary effect on his chanting of japa. Got a long ways to go. But like we attended one together, we attended two together. The two that I've attended, we attended together. And one of them was in Ojai, California. And it was billed as, or advertised as, japa retreat for leaders. And some people didn't come because they didn't think that they were leaders, and they didn't want to be considered a leader. They wanted to be, you know, humble Vaishnav. But some of them came anyway just because we dragged them in. And the number of, I want to make a point, that the number of, we kind of went around the room and how many years were of devotional service, and not just like casual devotional service, but like in the fire, intense fire of devotional service, Giriraj Maharaj and Niranjana Maharaj and Jamuna and Vishakha and, you know, this Badahari was temple president. I've been, you know, Mr. Cuckoo Man for a long time in devotional service. So many years, it was, you know, several hundred years of intense devotional service of persons all who have come together for the same purpose of increasing the quality of their chanting. And it had a strong effect. I'm looking forward to the next one. And Gita Nagari and Labor Day weekend, and Badahari will be joining us. And it's not, the recommendation is not that specific event, although that's nice. It's the purpose of really making a commitment to focus on, in the association of others who are likewise making a commitment to focus on the quality of chanting. And then, as Badahari just said, there's still a long way to go. What that long way to go is the distracting stuff. The distracting stuff is both while we're chanting and when we're not chanting, not physically chanting or literally uttering the holy name. How you frame your day-to-day life is the next improving the quality of chanting item. like work or school or home or, you know, social, when you're spending time with other people, just, you know, regular social exchange. The dedication of those things to Krishna, the spiritualizing of those things. I'll give a practical little example. In service to our society, there's a number of us who have to do some managerial stuff, some administration, GBC level headache stuff. You know, the problem goes to the lightning rod. The lightning rod has to figure out what to do with all that electricity. So one of the rules that we've set up is, there's two rules. One's be on time. And then another rule is, let us begin with some spiritual topic. It's something that somebody has read and it inspired them. Some spiritual experience, some manifestation of Krishna's mercy, something that focuses on Krishna. Then go ahead and engage our minds and whatever else we have there, little intelligence, and try to sort through some practical stuff. But spiritualize from the very beginning. Spiritualize your activities in the home and in the workplace, your approach to school, whatever. See that it's done for Krishna, and if it's done for Krishna, that there's that Krishna's there. You're carrying Krishna thought and Krishna message with you. Another little side exchange was, a group of our youth were getting together and they made a rule. Something like, you know, no prajalpa. That's a hard rule to follow when you're youth, but when you're any age, I guess, no prajalpa. So that you had to put something in that space, you put Krishna Katha in that space. So there are networks of things where a very busy day, we can't always, you know, drive the other side of town or come all the way to some other part of the country like we're doing here. People from this state and that state and the other state coming together, we can't always do that. But so on a regular basis, some, you know, some interaction with the devotees, like there's many conference call kinds of reading of Krishna book and studying Bhakti Shastri and different things because people are in different places. So it begins on time and ends on time, but it's Krishna Katha, and then the basis of those relationships becomes Krishna Katha. And the next time you see that other person, it's Krishna Katha instead of prajalpa. You consciously put Krishna Katha right in the front, right, like in the center of your exchanges with one another, so that you spiritualize the social / worldly aspect of life. And another, just in dealing with the everyday aspects of life, seeing that things are in the quality of goodness as far as possible. Being a itinerant sannyasi, I have the fortune, good fortune or bad fortune, I have the fortune of experiencing lots of things. And it's, I'll share this with you, that one of the things that's very noticeable right away is the mode of nature in which a house is kept or a car is kept or how people live. And things like regulation of habit and cleanliness and simplicity. You know, the things that we read in Bhagavad Gita are characteristic of the quality of goodness. Brahma karma svabhavajam. It's immediately very telling. Cleanliness is immediately telling. during this recent Rath Yatra here in Chicago, four devotees approached me who were visiting devotees who had been to the Chicago temple before, and they commented how clean the temple is. Because, you know, three of them were with this tour, and they're going from temple to temple also. So this is a compliment for our brahmacharis in the temple, whereas the temple is really clean and things are in their place, and wow, like, we're not used to that. Not only in Chicago but elsewhere, it's just not normally like that. So that speaks something about creating an atmosphere that's conducive for quality chanting, quality hearing and chanting, keeping things simple, keeping things clean, being very regulated, speaking nicely, not harshly, speaking palatably, speaking the truth, and so forth. Framing your life in the quality of goodness enhances the quality of chanting. I could give examples, but I don't think. When someone's life is in disarray, they're not able to chant properly, hear and chant properly. And when persons, it takes some time to put your life in proper order. Keep it clean. But it's much easier to keep something clean than it is to let something get deteriorate and even think about cleaning it and then cleaning it. It's much easier to keep things clean. I'm restraining myself from giving examples. The bad example type. The college student bad example type is one category. This is, it fits in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching about, you know, how you deal with worldly things. He certainly speaks about performance of prescribed duties according to Varnashram, because that's a standard thing, but the devotional service goes beyond Varnashram, and therefore it's a phrase that Prabhupada used and others have repeated and used as Daivi Varnashram, where the essence is engaging oneself in service to Krishna, or Yukta Vairagya. The essence is not the prescribed duty. The essence is the dedication unto Krishna part. And going back to cleanliness and truthfulness and so on. You can't dedicate lies to Krishna. But you can't dedicate dirty things to Krishna. You can't dedicate chaos to Krishna. You dedicate orderliness to Krishna with love. Here's Bhaktivinoda Thakur describing in Bhajana Rahasya. Accept the kind of work necessary for keeping yourself alive without engaging in gossip. Do not work for the sake of pleasing the senses. Act in such a way that your powers of speech and thought are healthy and you do not lose your commitment to appropriate renunciation. Appropriate renunciation, appropriate for ashram, appropriate for time and circumstance. And that's just dealing with the worldly circumstances of life. Now, primarily here we have householders and students and a sprinkle of brahmacharis. So what's appropriate, you know, what socially goes on in the world today is not appropriate for a Vaishnava. But how do we deal with those circumstances? You face them all the time. I face them whenever I travel. And, you know, how to interact where... Anyway, so as householders or as young students, you're devotees, but you're dealing with people who aren't devotees. They don't have a sense of devotion, they don't have a sense of renunciation, they have a sense of enjoying spirit. And, you know, the boundary of the rules is ever expanding. So, what the appropriate renunciation is something that, even in worldly circumstances, shouldn't be abandoned because of the circumstances. I'll just give one example. I'll skip the details. Even some family members or some people that don't know how to relate with a devotee. I mean, my sister... I hadn't seen one of my sisters for a long time, some, I don't know, 15, 18 years, something like that. And she was very respectful. She wanted to know, how should I, like, you know. I said... It's universal. So... No, she gave some other options, and I said, this one. But just like, you know, while we were on Harinam, there was this... No, excuse me. I was going on a japa walk yesterday, right in the neighborhood where I was staying, and there was an elderly Chinese man with his, apparently like a grandchild. He was out in the front playing. He saw me walking, and immediately he went like this. It's like universal. So... It doesn't have to get into the other stuff with our social interactions. What's appropriate renunciation? Because it's helpful for persons to have respect. And it's helpful for us to act with some dignity, even in situations where people aren't behaving in a very dignified manner, like Harinam last night. We maintain our dignity. We can have, you know, dance and joyful spirit, but our social interaction should earn the respect of others. And that will help us in our chanting of the holy name. So here's the last quote I wanted to read. Again, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur describing. There's another one I wanted to read. It's a paraphrase, it's a different translation of Shikshastakam number 5. Here we go. O son of Nanda Krishna, king of the country of love, I appeal for your affection. I am your servant. I feel deep within myself that I have some connection to you. I am subordinate to you. But somehow, I am now in adverse circumstances. There are so many enemies within me trying to take me away from you. Therefore, I cannot give my full attention to you and your name. At the same time, I feel from the deepest place in my heart that you are my master. You are all and everything to me. My heart will never be satisfied without your companionship, so I appeal to you. I'm in under unfavorable circumstances. I'm suffering. And without your grace, I do not find any relief from my present imprisoned condition. It's calling out. So that's that crying for Krishna in this atmosphere of, so we need to connect the techniques of chanting to this core mood of feeling helpless and dependent upon Krishna, the mercy of Krishna, the mercy of Krishna's dear merciful representatives, to please pick us up from this condition somehow, although we're not qualified. Rupa Goswami prayed like that. I'm shameless. I have no qualification, and yet I'm asking anyways. Please be merciful. So then that gives impetus to properly apply the technique, and then we connect the technique to that sincere desire, calling from the heart. And this is, you know, this is a big topic. We'll continue. How to improve the quality of chanting from our acharyas. Any thoughts or comments from anybody? Yes, Jai Jagannath. Did you hear that question over that side? He asked, going back to an earlier reference to Narada and his association with the sages during the 4 months of the rainy season, it had such a profound effect on his life, life-transforming effect. Now, in our case, we also associate with elevated Vaishnavas and doesn't have the same transforming profound effect. So the question, that's a comment, the question is, how do we understand it, or why, or... how deep the relationship should be before it has that profound effect. Needs to be deep. How deep? That deep. Deep enough that it makes it. So. Huh? How to deepen our relationships with those with whom we associate so that that transformation takes place, that profound effect takes place. Well, let's go back to Narada for just a moment. He doesn't describe that, from his side at least, he was like, you know, pumping himself up, like really trying to like deepen that relationship. It just happened. It happened in a very natural way. What he does describe is his quality. He was not frivolous, not like a little boy normally is, just, you know, overly talkative, and but he was very peaceful. and he was happy to serve them, happy to hear from them, and they saw those gentle qualities in this little boy. So they're sages. They were naturally affectionate. This little boy was like this. And so they reciprocated, and then it grew naturally. There's something that Kapila Dev says to Devahuti. It's a little one of these songs that Badahari was leading us in. The ornaments of the devotee, never leave them. Just like the soul is eternal, he describes the Devahuti. Those ornaments of the soul never leave the soul. Whatever opulences was the word that the translation was, it never leaves. So we find, for example, in our Hare Krishna movement, there are children that are just jewel-like. They're just amazing. I mean, there's some other ones too, but there's some that are just amazing. And they soak in everything. You say something, ask them 1 year later, and they remember exactly what you said, and they applied it. I mean, it's just a continuation of their previous life. So it seems that that was the situation of Narada. Who Narada was in the life before he was the son of the maidservant, there's no indication in the Bhagavatam. There may be some indication somewhere else, but something that's there. And just so whatever we have now in our case, whatever we have or don't have, we're receiving this example, and so it tells us this is something that's really important. I should explicitly cultivate it, and it should go deeper and deeper and deeper. And as we go deeper into those quality relationships with quality personalities, it stays with us. And when you meet such a quality person, just like when you first met Radhanath Maharaj, he touched your heart. And your mother too. It's like, you know, he has that quality. It's an ornament. It's an opulence of his character from who knows how many years or lifetimes of. It's just so whatever position we're in, it's a very important point to go further in the quality of our spiritual life, and the quality of our chanting is to deepen those relationships. It's nice to glorify devotees, so I'll go ahead and do it. When I was away from Chicago for some time and came back, and three devotees, you're one of them, spoke to me how much they already miss Krishna Smarana's association. But just, you know, voluntarily, just that's what they spoke. Because, you know, they're the same person, you're the same person, and other, you know, but something about him, he's touched your heart and you become attached. And others. So it's both ways, on the receiving and the giving end. And the more that you can receive that association, the more that you're qualified in order to give that association. Just like receiving the holy name before you can give the holy name. Receive with the faith of others that have faith before you can give with faith. It's one of the reasons why I'm going to do it again. Sorry, Badahari, but one of the reasons why inviting Badahari to come to an event with this theme, because he just emanates an appreciation for the holy name. And so it's going to exude out into the persons who have come together for appreciating the holy name. And if we want to develop some deeper faith in the holy name and go more deeply into the holy name, we need such association. Now, he doesn't want to hear that, but he wants association of others who have faith in the holy name so he can go further, because that's his humble nature. And I'm sure attending the 24-hour kirtan event was such an experience, as the japa retreats were such an experience. There's, you know, many persons who have such a taste for the holy name. I called Ananta to come to the, you know, Achyuta Gopi's brother, to come attend the Memorial Weekend retreat, because Govinda was supposed to come and we were waiting forever for his visa to get approved, and it didn't get approved, and so it was, you know, we had no arrangement. So I called Ananta, and it was like, you know, squeezing a glove gentleman. It was. Oh, the holy name is so merciful. Krishna is so powerful. It was just like, that's what came out. Krishna is so kind. And then it was, you know, I don't know if I can come, but it was, you know, that was just the first thing that came out, just like with Madhava. Please bless me that I can chant the holy name with purity, without offense. They have a real taste for it, you know. Right, you know. It's just the nature of a person. So one has to receive before one, and our mission is to give, but how can we give unless we've received? So we have to develop at whatever stage, so that your question is how to, we have to get the message, it's really important, and then with whatever capacity we have, nurture those relationships with those very sincere qualified devotees, so that we can become then in turn extensions of that network. And that's like, I'm looking at him because he asked the question, but it applies to everybody here. Narada is the example, but it's universal. When in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when it describes how Lord Chaitanya spread the chanting of the holy name throughout South India, it gives the example that he would contact someone and they would become transformed in ecstatic love, and they would contact someone else who would become transformed in, just by contact. And then, you know, by osmosis or something, by chain reaction. And the principle of seeking that eagerly, you know, again, from the heart, receiving within the heart, and then acting from the heart on that principle of sadhu sangha. So important. How to, with great eagerness and sincerity, as far as we can go, within reason. Yes? There's more emphasis on the reaching out part than the receiving part. In general, or in what we're hearing now? In general, that's what your life is made up of. You're not able to understand the receiving part. Do you understand what she's not understanding? That's your husband.
How will he understand?
I was going to turn to him to have him help me understand what your question is. We'll turn the topic a little bit and see what happens. Gratitude. How can there be gratitude unless you receive something? Unless you acknowledge that you receive something? How can there be a feeling of gratitude? And what does gratitude do? Gratitude inspires feeling of love and an act of reciprocating in love with that which one has received. How can there be love without receiving? So just like, you know, this recent dynamic that happened in Gita Nagari surrounding your initiation. So there was some concern, and here's some appreciation for your good husband. He was just being supportive of you. And you received it. And with that receiving, it helped you, you know, to do what you felt was the right thing to do in that circumstance. But, you know, you received something. And from the other Vaishnavas and from your spiritual master, you received something. And so you were full. You felt support and being cared for, protected, respected. And then you could make your decision. So that's an example of receiving. And through the medium of that kind of receiving, then here comes the holy name. And it's the same principle. Because it's through the mercy of the loving relationships of others, that of spiritually minded others, that you receive the holy name, and it nurtures faith in the holy name. Just as is happening right now. And, you know, I'm encouraging that nurturing of faith in the holy name from Badahari and the other devotees also. And that's a receiving experience if the heart is open. The result of the heart being open is faith increases. And the manifestation of that faith having increased is the quality of your chanting will be with greater enthusiasm, greater faith, and greater clarity. And then you're acting with this mood of gratitude. That means in a maturer stage is love. So those are examples of receiving. The reaching out part was you came all the way from Boston to come here. And now it's, you know, open up the heart and receive. And then, having received, there's this feeling, gratitude. And then you do something with it. You give back. That's love. And your faith, and thereby the faith in the holy name, and the person's message, the process, and the holy name itself have grown. And there's deeper, now Jai Jagannath's question, by that process there's deepening of relationships. You know, from this experience, as well as the other reference, the Gita Nagari experience, a deep appreciation for the interactions that you had in that crucial moment with the persons that you interacted with. That's permanent. Krishna arranged a very nice circumstance for you. Yes.
I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
You made a statement which was, I think, very profound, that, you know, Lord is merciful. Lord's name is even more merciful. Really, God. And we know Lord has delivered many, many people, many devotees, but Lord's name has delivered even more devotees. Mm-hmm. So, that was very profound.
And the manner of delivery is so sweet. Madharam, Madhure Vyopi.
My question was, Maharaj,
you should have been in Harinam last night. Were you in Harinam last night? I'll share some of the merciful nature of the holy name. There, one of our brahmacharis was speaking with one person for about 10 minutes, and he brought him over to the Harinam party. And he started chanting and chanting and dancing and chanting, and he was happy. He was as happy as all the devotees. You know, from 0 to 90 in, you know, 10 minutes. Wow. And I'm sure we'll see him at the Sunday feast. Etc. You know, the Chinese man just walking by, chanting japa. And I didn't know the Chinese people did that, but it just, you know, it's just automatic. So merciful. The holy name is so merciful. Because who are any one of us? We're like, you know, specks of dirt. And the holy name is, it's amazing.
Almost like Lord's name has controlled Lord's personal form and also his personal form. That was my question. A lot of people worship Lord in his personal form, and a lot of people worship Lord in his impersonal form. And it looks to me that Lord's name really covers both personal form and impersonal form. Is that the right way of thinking, Maharaj?
I'm not sure how you're thinking, so it's not that the holy name is impersonal, and Krishna's rupa is personal. The holy name, nama rupa, and Krishna's rupa are the same, while different. And the difference, one of the differences is, one is through sound, the other is through form. But the sound also has form. Prabhupada would speak extensively about that. I mean, there's so much of technology, television technology, and, you know, so many technologies are based on the fact that sound has form. And what to speak of spiritual sound has form. So the nature of the name of Krishna is more merciful in that it's accessible. When we don't have the eyes to see Krishna's spiritual form, we can have the ears to hear Krishna's sound form and immediately contact him on the platform of the soul at once. Now, this thing of the impersonal form being also part of Krishna's name, I don't know where that's coming from. I don't know what you mean by that. Well, he has his swarup, and in his swarup he descends on earth and performs pastimes. That's his personal form. His name is not different than his personal form, but it's not that his name is his impersonal form and his personal form. His name is his form, and they're non-different. Does that help? Okay. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, we have a relay system here. Speak loud enough so that somebody up front can hear, because I can't hear you. Hare Krishna. I can hear that one.
Could you elaborate more on Krishna taking the name of
Yes. Everyone heard that one.
You said more to the question.
Oh, there's more to the question. You expect you to be fascinated by the job that you do. Passionate about the job that you do. Everything is which ways? Which ways?
Goal-based
and deadline-based at work. You got to be passionate for the goal and deadline. Go, 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 go. And then you chant your japa. Well, that's a seminar in itself, but I can say a few things. To be a transcendentalist in the workplace, where you're supposed to be this and that, passionate, goal-based, deadline-based, or, you know, the student at school, we have some students who just adjust the frame of the question, and in school you're supposed to be, you know, get A's, and parents are coming, you're coming back and say, how did you do in your exam, what did you get on your report card, and all that stuff. And they're expected to perform. And, you know, their peers are expecting to perform, the teacher, everyone's expecting them to jump through hoops and do somersaults, and, you know, and land up on their feet. And social and academic and sports and the rest of it, too. And soul connection, too. And chant your rounds and somehow be Superman or Supergirl. So, in dealing with the worldly circumstances, it requires a parallel intelligence, where simultaneous with what the intelligence that the achievers at work are doing or the achievers in school are doing, the devotee has to have a parallel intelligence that's always active, that sees how the illusory energy is really illusory. This is this mode of nature, that's that mode of nature, and transcendence is so covered in this situation. But look at this amazing manifestation of the modes of nature over here. And this is how the materialists see things and do things. You're studying with the transcendental intelligence, which confirms all the things that you read in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Yep, it's like that. Yep, here's the specimen, because this is how it describes in the scripture. This is exactly how it happens. Yep, mm-hmm. Mode of passion leads to anger. Yep. And then, you know, blaming the other guy because the job didn't get done on time, and fault finding and all that mode of ignorance stuff, the anger that comes from frustration. There's this mode of nature, there's that mode. And so meanwhile, you're going on in with a transcendental brain, seeing that thing happening. You're doing your part because you're doing it for Krishna, not for the goal, the deadline, the timeline, the passion. You're doing it because you want to be a devotee of Krishna, and you want to show these people, as well as be yourself, a devotee of Krishna. This is how you be a devotee of Krishna in a place like that. So you're fixed in your mission, the for Krishna mission, but you're getting, you know, some, you're going, you're taking the theory and going to the lab. You take science courses? So you study the theory and you go to the lab. And you go experiment in the lab. You know, this is the experiment place in the workplace, where here's how the modes of nature work. Here's what passion does to people. Here's what ignorance does to people. Hardly is there much to study about goodness. I'm hardly even mentioning it. Every now and then there's some random act of goodness in the workplace. Well, that's interesting. That's a mode of goodness. But you're over here in the transcendental plane, striving to do your duty for Krishna because they have these and those expectations. And I'm not passionate for the work. I want to be attached to Krishna, but I want to do this for Krishna, so that by staying strong in your Krishna consciousness, what will happen in due course of time is people in passion and ignorance land over here are going to find that you're stable, steady, fixed, 10 steps ahead of the game. And they come and ask you, you know, how come you're calm, cool, and collected through all this stuff that's going on over here? You don't get stressed out. What's your program? And then you can explain Krishna consciousness to them in a way that is appropriate for the person and the circumstance. You're Krishna's little emissary in that workplace where they have all these passionate rules. And you just don't play, you don't play by those rules. You work for Krishna, and that's your rule. It's a big topic, but that's some starting points. Learning how to, because it's a whole other cultivation than however many years of education you've had with the other set of rules. You have to reprogram yourself with another set of rules. And the support structure is here in Prabhupada's books. The Association of Devotees and Prabhupada's teachings, and you go to the lab of the workplace or the classroom every day and you're experimenting. Here's how I can, in your home. I do my sadhana, I read the scripture, I worship the deity and offer my food, and I go to the workplace. And I'm learning. Transcendental learning. And, you know, you have a mission on behalf of Krishna there. Distribute prasadam. Answer people's questions. Help them when there's some calamity in their life. Something just totally collapses and falls apart. They're going to go to the spiritual person in the workplace. And then you can really say something that's appropriate for the person and the circumstance. You have a mission, a transcendental mission on behalf of Krishna. You can reach people that a sannyasi can't reach. You're in the workplace with them every day, as passionate, as goal-oriented as they are. And it's appropriate, it's inappropriate for a sannyasi to be in that work situation. But it would be appropriate for a grahastha to be in, and so know that your duty is a different duty. And then when some sannyasi comes to your place of town, and you know, then you can bring them to some program and they can hear something more if they're so inclined. But you do your little part, gradually, making little bridges to bring them one step closer to Krishna. Even if it's just respecting, here's somebody we know in the workplace as a devotee, and they show the qualities of a devotee. That's service to Krishna in the workplace. That as a beginning, a big topic. Yes, Nidhi.
I appreciate Mataji asked that question this time, and I've been struggling with that issue myself. In follow up to that question, I would like to ask, how as a beginner, when you are trying to inculcate the spiritual strength and the intelligence of battle and intelligence,
when you're trying to do which now? There's like a buzz saw and an airplane and your voice. Okay, try again. You're trying to cultivate which? Parallel intelligence. Thanks. Yeah. How to balance sadhana and work. Well, that's not connected to parallel intelligence. The parallel intelligence connects to your sadhana. And the parallel intelligence is just an extension of your sadhana. That means you're hearing and chanting, your study. But balance is your question. Again, a short answer. This is a big topic, but the short answer is that.
Nimitrangi, can you come and fix?
Krishna's crown and Radharani's shawl. So, blocks of time is the answer. Under guidance, someone is guiding you. You consider blocks of time. I should dedicate this much time to study, this much time for sadhana, this much time for hygiene and cleanliness, this much time for health. You have your blocks of time. And when you're doing what you're doing, you're present. When you're studying, you're studying. When you're doing the things that you need to do in life, you're cooking, you're cooking. Your thoughts are with Krishna, but you're cooking. And you just set up your time in such a way that, and then as life has it, it gets unbalanced. You know, something throws it off. Some something, or another something, or 10 somethings, throws it off. But you have your frame. So the next day you're back. You know, you adjust, you get back to that schedule. And stay regulated. That's part of goodness. And we discussed this in class the other morning about being present. When you're doing the thing that you're supposed to do, you're fully present. I was in pre-med, as a completely new person where there really wasn't much developed in Krishna consciousness at the time as far as support structure. You have a lot of support structure that I didn't have, and I found that if by doing quality sadhana, my study went like that in comparison. It didn't drag out, I wasn't spaced out, it was very focused. So much so that I did the academic part and had more time for reading Prabhupada's books. Blocks of time, be very focused and practice on it, and the strength of that focus primarily will come from the quality of your chanting, fixing the mind on the holy name. This second level of bringing the mind to Krishna, it will give you the spiritual strength to do the other things in Krishna consciousness efficiently. Yes? And cultivating quality relationships. Okay, so what to do? That's the question, what to do when interpersonal relationships, we find that they're at a level where the challenge exceeds our capacity. No. Yeah. No, the situation doesn't make anything. That's blaming the situation. The problem is out there. The language is wrong. The situation is what it is. And my situation is what it is. You can't blame the situation. when this happens over here, something else happens. I'm just speaking about language right now. The blaming of the situation for what I'm going through. Take responsibility for what you're going through, subjectively, and take shelter of the holy name. Take shelter of devotee association. Take shelter of Prabhupada's books. Take shelter of the spiritual potency. And if the situation is what you're not able to handle, you're not able to handle it. You turn to the resources that Krishna has provided you so you can stay Krishna conscious. And in that state of Krishna consciousness, you, as best the intelligence that Krishna provides you, you do that. One more question, and we'll chant for a bit. I'm wondering about, can somebody check the, Neha, can you check in the kitchen area and find out, do they have a plan for lunch at what, a certain time? And let me know. Huh? Okay. So that's when I'm, that's, let the kitchen department know that, like at 1:15, because I'd like to have Badahari chant again before we end. 1:15, 1:20. We'll have lunch. Yes. Chanting will be helped by good relationships. We can say it's stronger than that, but go ahead. Without loving relationships, we're not going to be able to effectively chant the holy name. Krishna's in the center. That's how it helps. How could it not help? And try it the other way around. I don't recommend that you try it the other way around. But if you were to try, if those who don't put Krishna in the center, what's it like? Now, especially for devotees, those kinds of what's it like rules prevail. Because Krishna has a higher bar for devotees. It's, you know, it's a different set of rules. And in those different set of rules, it what the result of a very sympathetic relationship, or let's say a synergistic relationship between husband and wife, ends up in attachment for Krishna. Through the medium of, or through the exchange of, the husband-wife relationship. And if not, even if it's one of those, you know, it's a nice relationship, it doesn't result in attachment to Krishna. It results in bondage to the material energy. At best, in the mode of goodness version. But even the mode of goodness version is, in Kali Yuga, is not very much goodness. But minus Krishna. So we don't want minus Krishna. We want with Krishna. So put Krishna in the center. And not just chanting, but all things. All the, you know, all the things. And there's a lot of things, so Krishna's in the center. We're waiting for Badahari. Is there any, while we're waiting? Oh, can we chant for a bit? We're going to, something like quarter after, just have kirtan.